Tad Ugrasenatmajanas Trahidrastam Vritya Vritrasahasi Rupam Chedam Purusham Dhyana Dishnyam Ma Pratyaksham Mamsa Drisham Krishista Sa, your lordship, Tvam, you, Gorat, terribly fierce, Ugrasena Atmajat, from the saint, son of Ugrasena, Na, us, Trahi, kindly protect, Trashtan, who are very much afraid of him. Britya Ritrasaha Asi, you are naturally the destroyer of the fear of your servants. Rupam, in your Vishnu form. Cha, also. Idam, this, Purusham, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Dhyana Dishnyam, who is appreciated by meditation. Ma, not, Pratyaksham, directly visible. Mangsadrisham, to those who see with their material eyes. Krishishta, please be. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My Lord, because you dispel all the fear of your devotees, I request you to save us and give us protection from the terrible fear of Kamsa. Your form is Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's appreciated by yogis in meditation. Please make this form invisible to those who see with material eyes. Please repeat. My Lord, you dispel all the fear of your devotees.
You dispel all the fear of your devotees.
I request you to save us and give us protection from the terrible fear of Kamsa. Your form of as Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is appreciated by yogis in meditation. Please make this form invisible to those who see with material eyes. Purport, the word dhyana dishyam is significant in this verse because the form of Lord Vishnu is meditated upon by yogis. Dhyana vastita tadgatena manasa pashanti yam yoginaha. Devaki requested the Lord, who had appeared as Vishnu, conceal that form, for she wanted to see the Lord as an ordinary child, like a child appreciated by persons who have material eyes. Devaki wanted to see whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead had fact she appeared, or she was dreaming the Vishnu form. If Kamsa were to come, she thought, upon seeing the Vishnu form, he would immediately kill the child. But if he saw a human child, he might reconsider. Devaki was afraid of Ugrasena Atmaja. That is, she was afraid not of Ugrasena and his men, but of the son of Ugrasena. Thus, she requested the Lord to dissipate that fear, since He is always ready to give protection, abhayam, to His devotees. My Lord, she prayed, I request you to save me from the cruel hands of the son of Ugrasena, Kamsa. I am praying to your lordship to please rescue me from this fearful condition, because you are always ready to give protection to your servitors. The Lord has confirmed this statement in the Bhagavad Gita, By assuring Arjuna, you may declare to the world, my devotee shall never be vanquished. While thus praying to the Lord for rescue, Mother Devaki expressed her motherly affection. I understand that this transcendental form is generally perceived in meditation by great sages, but I am still afraid because as soon as Kamsa understands that you have appeared, he might harm you. So I request that for the time being, you become invisible to our material eyes. In other words, she requested the Lord to assume the form of an ordinary child. My only cause of fear for my brother Kamsa is due to your appearance. My Lord Madhusudana, Kamsa may know that you are already born. Therefore, I request you to conceal this four-armed form of your lordship, which holds the four symbols of Vishnu, namely the conch shell, the disc, the club, and the lotus flower. My dear Lord, at the end of the annihilation of the cosmic manifestation, you put the whole universe within your abdomen. Still, by your unalloyed mercy, you have appeared in my womb. I am surprised that you imitate the activities of ordinary human beings just to please your devotee. Devaki was so afraid of Kamsa that she could not believe that Kamsa would be unable to kill Lord Vishnu, who was personally present. Out of motherly affection, therefore, she requested the Supreme Personality of Godhead to disappear. Although because of the Lord's disappearance, Kamsa would harass her more and more, thinking that the child born of her was hidden somewhere, she did not want the transcendental child to be harassed and killed. Therefore, she requested Lord Vishnu to disappear. Later, when harassed, she would think of him within her mind. So, Atvam Gaurad Ugrasenat Mujanas Trahi Trashtam Dritya Vitrasahasi Rupam Chedam Purusham Dhyana Dishnyam Ma Pratyakshamam Sadrisham Krishasta. My Lord, because you dispel all the fear of your devotees, I request you to save us and give us protection from the terrible fear of Kamsa. Your form is Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is appreciated by yogis in meditation. Please make that form invisible to those who see with material eyes. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Buddha Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Devasatarne. Here fear is being mentioned again. Fear as a Vyabhichari Bhava. As I mentioned the other day, there are different types of bhavas or transcendental emotions, beginning with Vibhava, Anubhava, Satvika Bhava, Stai Bhava, and Vyabhichari Bhava. So Vyabhichari Bhava is compared to just like when the mother sees her beloved child on the edge of a roof about to fall off. That her motherly affection increases. Although the situation is certainly very fearful, but due to the intense motherly affection, therefore, her bhava is increasing. Similarly, if there is some ghastly scene, or just like when Krishna was playing on the breast of Putana, Mother Yashoda's motherly affection increased after Krishna had killed Putana. So similarly, Devaki is in the prison of Kamsa, and her motherly affection is focused on Lord Vishnu, and she's afraid for his safety. Although Vishnu, of course, being the cause of the cosmic creation, being the controller of the time factor, there is not much to worry about for him. Because it is said, he's fear by fear personified. Mrityu Sara Harashtraha. The major fear in this material world is that everyone's afraid of death. And Krishna, Mrityu Saraharastraham, as death, he's taking everything away from everyone. But no one can take anything away from him. Just like in this world, we make friendship or relationships with people we call our friends because we think they can give us something. If our friend can't give us anything, they're not a very good friend. At least they should give us some compliment or encouragement, something. And if someone who's trying to take something away from us, they become our enemy. Even they can try to take away our prestige or whatever else, or to speak of physical objects, they become our enemy. Supposedly, the Russians were trying to conquer the world and come to America and Australia and take away everything, even the little children's teddy bears. So people were very afraid that these people are heartless. They'll come here, they'll run over the country with a steam roller, take away everyone's lollipops and everything, and throw them into the sea and laugh. Now we got you. So everyone was afraid of Russia because they were afraid that they were going to take everything away. But now they're not afraid of Russia. Now they're trying to figure out how to exploit Russia. So now they become more friendly. But actually this friendship and so-called enemies, Prahlad Maharaj said that in this material world, there is no real enemy or friend. There's only the uncontrolled mind. That's the only real enemy. The only real enemy is, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Udra Atmanatmanam Natmanam Avasaraya Atmaiva Yatmano Bandur Atmaiva Ripur Atmanaha Bandur Atmanas Tasya Yenatmanajita Anatmanas Tushat Rutve Vartet Atmaiva Shatrutva Shitatmana Prasantasya Paramatma Samahita Shitoshna Sukaduke Shutamana Pamanayo. A man has to elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself, that the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and the enemy as well. But for one who has conquered the mind, it is the best of friends, and for one who has failed to do so, his very mind will be the greatest enemy. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached because he has attained tranquility. To such a person, happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, fame and infamy are all the same. In other words, we, the conditioned soul, have only one real problem in the material world, only one real thing to be fearful of, material attachment. Because of our becoming materially attached, therefore, we're being overwhelmed by the false ego, and we're forgetting our spiritual identity, and therefore we think so many things which are false, like we think we're going to die. We think that with the death of the body, then I die. But if I realize that with the death of the body, I don't get affected at all. Just like our body's already dying at every moment. Sometimes the example is given that the body is changing. But according to our acharyas, actually the body's not changing. The body is disappearing at every moment and a new body is manifesting. Just like when you're watching a movie, one picture after another is rapidly being projected, so it appears that someone is moving on the film. But actually, it's just one image after another that looks like it's going through the motions of movement. So it's actually separate pictures. It's not one changing picture. It is many different pictures. Similarly, material world means that every moment, Lord Vishnu is creating a different image. So at every moment, we're quitting one body and taking another one. But because it's so subtle, we don't notice it. Maybe after 20, 30 years, when we were 3 years old, and one of our relatives sees us, now we're 23, and they say, oh, you've grown. Actually, we haven't done anything. We're simply changed, our body has changed. And now we don't have a 3-year-old body anymore, we have a 23-year-old body, and gradually that picture is changing, and we'll get another body. So we've gone through so many bodies, at every moment we're going through so many different bodies, but we're not dying. Nothing's happening to us. The only thing that's happening to us, under certain conditions of material existence, then we become more conscious, and under certain conditions of material experience, we become less conscious. Therefore, the aim of life is not to change from one material situation to another, it's to change from one consciousness to another. ultimately to come to Krishna consciousness. And in Krishna consciousness, there is no fear. In the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has mentioned, Abhayam Sattva Samashudir Jnana Yoga Vyavyastiti Danam Dhamma Sajagnascha Swadhyaya Tapa Arjavam. So these are the beginning of the qualities of the ashrams. Actually, the varnas, not the ashrams. So the first... No, actually it is the ashrams. The first ashram is sannyas ashram. Well, sannyas, grihastha, yes, ashram. So there are three qualities for the sannyasi: fearlessness. In other words, if one is in the bodily concept of life, if one is convinced, I am this body, then what is there to renounce? You can't renounce your body because it's already going to be taken away from you. But there's nothing to renounce because you think you're the body. You can't renounce you. Therefore, sannyas means that one should be fearless because one knows that besides myself, there is a super soul. And he's arranging the material world, and he'll arrange in such a way as to help me become spiritually advanced. Tattenu kampam susamikshamano punjana evatmakritam vipakam ridvag vapudir viradhanamaste trivete yo bhukti sadayabha. That the vision of a transcendentalist, and we're actually all supposed to be sannyasis, although we don't say sannyasinis, but in the sense, everyone's supposed to be a sannyasi, or you could say a sannyasini, although officially not everyone may be a sannyasi. Sannyasi, in the sense that Krishna said, interesting, just, nashritya karma palam karya karma karotiya sasanyasitri yogita niniragnirna chakriya. What is the actual difference of sannyas? Complete abnegation. The idea is everything here belongs to Krishna. One who utilizes his energies in Krishna's service, they're a sannyasi. They're actually renounced. Anasakta shavishayan itarhu upiyunjitaha nirabandha Krishna sambande yukta vairagim uchite. That one who's factually dovetailing all his energies in Krishna's service, then he is said to be situated in renunciation. Of course, there may be in the Vana and Ashram system, there's a division according to one's development of that spirit of renunciation. But that spirit of renunciation is supposed to be cultivated, especially by devotees, that everything here is Krishna's. Therefore, there is fearlessness because we have nothing to lose. If we're identified with this body, then we're going to lose it anyhow. There's no reason to be afraid because whatever we're afraid of is inevitable. We came here, we didn't have anything, and when we leave here, we still won't have anything. And we're only here for a moment. So everything that we're worried about losing, we shouldn't worry about it because it was never ours in the first place. It's just the illusion that we think it is ours. So if we get rid of that illusion of being the possessor of the things in the material world, the only thing we'll really lose is our anxiety over losing it. We'll get over our illusion of thinking ourselves a possessor, and the only thing that we'll really lose ultimately is fear. And sattva samshudir, as soon as one is in the material world trying to enjoy material energy, then immediately one becomes contaminated by illusion. So one has to give up this mentality of being the enjoyer and the controller of the material energy. And jnana yoga vyavastiti, that one has to see things properly. One has to see that I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not the controller. Krishna is the enjoyer and the controller, and I'm Krishna's servant. So that is the perfection of renunciation, to come to that consciousness. But before that, Krishna says, danam dhamma cha jagnascha. So dana means charity, and dhamma means sense of mind control, and jaga means sacrifice. So that's for the grihasthas, For the brahmacharis, there's swadhyaya, meditation on one's real self. And for the vanaprasthas, there is tapa, or austerity. So beginning with brahmachari life, one's aim should be to find out oneself. Not that we go to school, education means the aim is simply economic development. Just like if you, most students nowadays, we meet in the street. When I went to college, there were so many psychology majors, there were so many sociology majors, philosophy majors. So now everyone's a computer engineer, IT. If they're not IT, they're business. So practically everyone. Because why? Are they really going to discover who they are by IT? Are they really going to elevate their consciousness by learning business, economics? Real economics is that we need food to eat. Somehow or another, get some food. If you have millions of dollars in the bank and you can't get anything to eat, your economics is not very good. Just like here are the devotees, we're supposed to be poverty stricken. They don't even put us in the list of the poor. But after all, who's really poverty stricken? It's the person who can't get good food. He's poverty stricken. If you can get good food, then how can you say you're poor? Because that's really the basis of what you're trying to use your economics for. Food is the basis, then some shelter from the elements. And some nice relationships with people, nice family surroundings who can support you. And some freedom from anxiety over the future, some security. So do the multi-billionaires, do they eat nice food? Actually, they don't even know what to eat because they're poverty-stricken with knowledge. They have no knowledge. Therefore, they don't even know what food is. They eat some dead animal that was left over from World War II, and they think that's gourmet. Or they eat some eggs of a fish they spend thousands of dollars for. Or drink some rotten grapes left over from Napoleon's time. They pay a fortune for it. So because they have no knowledge, therefore they don't even know what to eat. What to speak of sleep. They're always thinking about how much money they gained today, how much money they lost yesterday, how much they'll get in the future. So they can't even sleep. And as far as relationships, they don't trust anyone because everyone's trying to take their money away from them. And in security, just imagine their house is surrounded by a wall with barbed wire, they have gates and guard dogs, and they have all kinds of, they're seeing a doctor every other week, taking so many pills. So does that seem like a very secure person? They don't trust anyone. They're afraid everyone's going to try to attack them. Just like there was one Indian gentleman in England, he's a billionaire. He comes to the temple every day. He has this huge mansion in England, but every day he has to sleep in a different room because he's afraid someone's going to come and kidnap him. So does that sound very secure? He has billions of dollars, he's always afraid. Not only are they going to take his property, they're going to take him. But the devotees, they get the nicest food, food fit for the Supreme Lord. They sleep everywhere. Anytime they can sleep, no worries. As I gave the example, we were distributing books at an airport one time, and one devotee approached one man and he said, "I can't read because I have insomnia. I can't sleep at night. Therefore, I can't take your book." So the devotee said, "Don't worry about it." He said, "We have a class and we have 50 devotees in the class every day. And as soon as we start reading this book, everyone falls asleep." So you take this book and read it, we guarantee you you'll fall asleep. So the man bought the book, he read the book and fell asleep. And relationships, at least, even if we don't have perfect relationships, at least we're trying to, by becoming purified by our philosophy, trying to develop better relationships. We have some methodology of improving our relationships by acting on the spiritual platform. And as far as fear goes, when you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. So mostly the devotees, they have hardly anything, so they're not worried about losing anything. Just like Sanatana Goswami, he had given up all his gold coins that his brother Rupa Goswami had given him to get out of the jail. He got out of the jail, he bribed the jail keeper. He was traveling, the hotel keeper, by palmistry or some astrological means, he had understood that this man has 8 gold coins. So he asked him for the gold coins. Ishan, his servant who was carrying them, he gave them to Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana Goswami, he realized that this man, he knows I have 8 gold, has something. Because otherwise, why is he so nice to me? I am apparently a poverty-stricken Muslim mendicant, and he's acting, giving me so many things, free rent, free food. So there must be something to it. So he asked Ishan, if he had his servant, if he had any money. He said, yes, I have 7 gold coins. So he said, give them to me immediately. So he took the gold coins and approached the hotel keeper and said, here, take the gold coins. So the hotel keeper said, no, actually you can keep the gold coins. I was going to kill you and take your gold coins because I know you have 8 gold coins. But I don't need them now. But Sanatana Goswami insisted, no, you take the gold coins because if you don't take them, someone else will kill me for them. And then he went back to Ishan and said, Ishan, you must have 1 gold coin. You take it and go back home. You're so attached to your gold coin. You're more attached to your gold coin than me. So you take the gold coin and go back home. So that way, Sanatana Goswami went to visit Chaitanya Mahaprabhu without any anxiety. But if you have 1 car, there's so much anxiety. What's going to happen to my car? Someone's going to scratch it. Someone's going to run into it. I have to have good insurance. I have to clean the car. I have to make sure that it's maintained nicely, etc. And if you have 2 cars, you have twice the anxiety. So it is not that I have 2 cars, now I'm twice as happy. Now I'm twice as anxious about what's going to happen to my cars. And if I have 3 or 4, then it goes up. Then I have to hire someone to take care of my cars. Then I'm worried about him. How is he going to take care of my cars? He's not going to steal my cars or take advantage of my cars. Therefore, Swadhyaya, Brahmachari life, is meant to understand who we are. That we're not this body, that we're actually spiritual souls, that we should realize ourselves. We should meditate ourselves rather than meditating upon what I'm gaining and losing in this material world. Then, if one is not able to keep that conception in mind, one can practice it by dana, dhammas, by sense and mind control. We can try to utilize this body, find the regular principles of household life, because after all, it's this man and woman, Radha and Krishna, Tarzan and Jane, Romeo and Juliet. This is the basic principle of material life. People want material opulence, economic development, so they can have something like an imitation Radha and Krishna pastime, which has been manifested in this world, personified as Tarzan and Jane, Romeo and Juliet, or whoever else you're into. So money is necessary because, after all, you can't be in the mood of spontaneous love all the time. You have to have a little vaidhi bhakti, a little opulence in this world nowadays. Even Romeo and Juliet, when they would have settled down, they would have needed part of their kingdom at least to keep it going, the relationship. So you need some economic development. Most people are in the mood of Dwarka, they're not in the mood of the pastimes and the farm life nowadays. People think that going out to a farm is touch those dirty cows and those dirty animals and that dirt there, and you got to work. It's not just pressing buttons, you actually got to do something with your body. How barbaric. So they're more or less into the dwarka pastimes. And for that you need money. Money, money, sweeter than honey, Prahlad Maharaj said. The professional soldier, the businessman, and the thief, they'll risk their very dear lives to get some money. But one has to control his senses, utilize his energies in Krishna's service, and perform sacrifice. So by such practice, especially in this age, Sankirtan Jagga is a sacrifice. So everyone has to participate in it, chanting the holy names, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deities, especially these essential things for the grihasthas. Then one may become, as gradually one becomes purified, then tapa. And the supreme tapa is to give up all material conceptions and fix the mind upon Krishna and give up this idea of economic development for sense gratification, but simply whatever you get, utilize it in the service of Krishna. Then one can come to the platform, that's vanaprastha. Then one can purify the consciousness to come to the state of fearlessness, knowledge, and cultivate, and actually realizing transcendental knowledge. So it seems it's the Vana Ashram system, and there we're devotees, but actually we're aspiring devotees. We're trying to come to the platform of devotion, and therefore we have to follow at least we have to get the results of the Vana Ashram system by properly applying the process that Prabhupada gave us. If we're not understanding ourselves more clearly, if we're not controlling our senses, if we're not understanding how to utilize our energies in Krishna's service as a sacrifice, if our minds are not becoming pure by the process of fixing them on Krishna, if we're not ultimately becoming fearless, if we're not actually realizing knowledge and becoming purified in consciousness, then we're not following the process. Either Vana, we're not getting the results that we're supposed to get. The results of the Vana Ashram system or the results of Krishna consciousness are the same. But sometimes it's more obvious the different stages that one goes through the Vana Ashram system, the different results, qualities that one develops, that Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, as one follows and becomes purified through the modes of nature, then different qualities develop. And if one is directly in Krishna consciousness or fully in Krishna consciousness, then yas yasti bhakti or bhagavata kinshana savarganas tatra samasate sura. And the symptom is that one should have all the good qualities. At least, if one has the quality of trying to take shelter of Krishna, then it's assumed if one is properly taking shelter of Krishna, then all the good qualities will follow, and then one will eventually come to the perfect platform of Krishna consciousness, and things such as fear will go away. But that doesn't mean that one, as someone like Mother Devaki, being afraid of Krishna, was in Maya. She was in Yoga Maya. So Maya we have to be in, but better to be in Yoga Maya than Mahamaya. So that's our choice. In Mahamaya there's fear, in Yoga Maya is fear, but that fear in Yoga Maya is blissful and enlightening. And in Mahamaya is distressing and bewildering. So we have to be under some kind of maya. Better to choose Yoga Maya, and this is the process that's explained in Krishna consciousness. So it was nice being here. Short visit. Nice to see that there's preaching going on here. The deities are going nicely. Of course, the deities are always going nicely, but the devotees are serving the deities nicely. Lord Jagannath got over his illness while he was here. He gets very nice prasadam, so I'm sure he'll be quite healthy. So is it nice to be here? Are there any questions? Yes.
Is Avanaravika Shakti the same as Mahamaya?
Well, it's part of Mahamaya. There's Avaratmaka Shakti, there's Prakakmaka Shakti, Prakakshatmaka Shakti. So Maya has different potencies. One of them is Avaratmika Shakti, which covers the living entity, our consciousness, our original pure consciousness, and pragmatika shakti pushes us to serve the senses and the mind. So those are the pushing energies and the covering energy of Maya. They're her energies. She directs us in the material world through those energies. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandhara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaura Premanande.